public comment. We have in front of us the minutes. You might have 2 seconds in front of you. You might have the one May 17th. Shall we spend 5 minutes or so looking at the minutes? May 17th. Thank you.
All right.
Let's get the minutes out of the way before we take up another current important matter. Are there any corrections, changes, reactions to the minutes? Everyone has not started reading them yet. I see these are rather long ones. We'll take another minute then. Is there any correction, or is there any changes, reaction to the minutes? If not, the minutes will... The minutes will be accepted, stand approved as they are. I see some people writing on the minutes. No comments to ask anyone? All right, before we open the rest of the meeting, as everyone knows, another tragedy in our country has taken place with one of the great leaders of our country. And it was some 10 weeks or 12 weeks ago, also on a Friday, the day after the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that we came into this room. This morning we come again with that kind of tragedy having recently occurred in our own state. Before we begin, I should like to ask that everyone stop in a moment of reverence to the late Senator Kennedy, have a moment of silence. And after, if anyone wishes to comment, please let us know. For the late Senator Robert Kennedy. Thank you. At the last meeting, we took up two specific items on the agenda and one that was not on the agenda. The last agenda items that we took up were consideration of the situation with regard to the school, the black and brown community's reactions thereto as a community issue. And number two was the use of mace, perception of the use of mace by minority versus majority. The other item that was not on the agenda discussed the last meeting, as reflected in a minute, involved, since that was May 17th itself, involved what was going on with regard to the national declared holiday by black individuals and groups across the country with regard to Malcolm X's birthday. And George Stevens, at that time, with a group of individuals from the school, made some presentations to us. But of the two scheduled agenda items, on page 3 of your minutes, it indicates that the interim committee, which now functions very well, I might add, was directed to contact school officials and let them know that the agenda today would be around the school issue, continuation of the school issue. I have a note in front of me here that indicates that those from the school, since Dr. Dale would not be here, and he is in Sacramento today, would be Mr. Wayne Fry, Mr. Bob Matthews, Dr. Jack Stone, and Mrs. Elisa Sanchez. In addition to that note, though, while I'm talking about those who contacted us, Mr. Bert Rivas will not be able to attend today, and neither will Mr. Rendone from the Sweetwater School District. Oh, he's over here, though.
Say, Mr. Wayman. No, I'm Ward Downing from the Sweetwater District, and Mr. Spencer Benzel, all from the Sweetwater District.
Thank you. Before we get to the item, then, on page 3, it says, it was suggested that the interim committee list this item, meaning the school issue item, for the next meeting, and that letters be sent specifically to school board members informing them of the topic to be discussed. Mrs. Martha Slaughter is the head of that committee. Before we move into that area, would the committee care to make a report, a member of your committee, Mrs. Slaughter?
Today with the chair, Carol, you have a copy of the committee report. We have a report of the discussion here, and Ms. Kelly could report on that, and Ms. Bateman can report on the mechanics of the structure of the dialogue.
All right. Which one is first?
Well, on the discussion, what we discussed here today, it was we spent a lot of time thinking about how we would attack the discussion. And so the various members on the dialogue and on the committee thought that we should contact community members, both parents, students, teachers, and administrators. So, we attempted to do so, and by letters we contacted the administrators, and Mrs. Slaughter and Bert Rivas attempted to contact the community members, and Bud Rains was to contact the teachers. Then the letters went out, and then they were followed up by phone calls.
Thank you.
Mr. Rendone was called. We're wondering why he's not here today.
Well, he had another commitment. I believe that there had been another business schedule, and there was a graduation today.
Adult school graduation.
From the State College.
Graduation today, and he's attending that.
Right.
Ms. Slaughter?
Well, I'm not quite sure whether the minority community can accept the repetitive absence of the people that we invite. We feel that this is just as important as any any other activities, if not more so.
I don't know, speaking for the Sweetwater District, you say repetitive, how many occasions has Mr. Rinn been invited here in his first invitation?
I think this is his first invitation, isn't it, Marta? From the Sweetwater School District.
Mrs. Walker tells me that he's not.
Well, so I'm told. Now, that's the best, and it's not the first time that he's been invited.
Okay, then.
Well,
I don't know.
I can only say this, that it is his habit, if he's not able to attend the meeting, to see about a representative, and that's the reason I'm here today, Mr. Mendel.
I'm not quite sure whether we are willing to accept representatives. We want the people that we are inviting.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm thinking of here is the use of the word repetitive, that I would understand that he's been invited a number of times, he's not appeared. So I'm explaining that it is his habit to see that a representative is there. And so, in the absence of my being invited before, or someone else that I know of, I would assume that he would have attended.
May I suggest then that Smarter, after today, would you make another contact with him and in advance so that he can get these notices? And we'll have two of you today? Two of you today from the Sweetwater School District. Mary, did you finish?
I didn't finish, no. I checked with our buildings division and found that a maximum of 80 people are supposed to be in this room. This takes, approximately 35 extra seats. And it will be arranged that the seats will be, as when you came in today, they will be arranged around the room for that total of 80. I also checked on the possibility of broadcasting outside of this room. There are no regular set-up facilities for that. There are facilities to broadcast from the council chamber to this room, but not vice versa. Cut that out. And the other question that comes up are the naming of the official dialoguers. And this is still a problem for us. We don't have an official list of official dialoguers that's been changed. And this is another thing to discuss in our next meeting. Before we can have reserved seats or name tags, we have to come up with who are to be considered official dialoguers and who are to be considered official representatives for specific topics and specific meetings. So this we haven't worked on.
Thank you. Then the one that's still pending there is that official list, and you will be meeting this week, next week, to tackle that problem, I take it. All right? And bring us a report back. Okay. For those who are here for the... Oh, any questions on the what committee reported? Any comments, questions, clarifications? For those that are here for the first time, that were invited, our format is that a topic be chosen by the committee and brought here, and we discuss it. We are at that point today. The topic is schools and any phases, any of its phases, regarding the new emphasis on brown curriculum or black studies, brown studies, whatever is going on with regard to schools as an issue in this country today, and in San Diego specifically. So the format is that we will discuss here the issues as relates to the school, and from this discussion today, draw up any specific questions that this body agrees that should be answered by different individuals or persons within the school system, and this list of questions then will become the basis for the next discussion, where some specific actions, specific answers, specific reactions will be obtained. Those from the school system here then are not expected to give official statements that represent the position of the school, as most of you know very well. It is to get any input that you can give us today in terms of the discussion. And from that discussion then, we will draw up this list of particulars. And that's the role that we will be expecting you to play today. We are fully aware of your positions within the school district. We then open the discussion for any reactions in terms of the issues raised last time or not raised last time with regard to the school. To get it on top of the table, we had with us last time 17 individuals from the elementary, junior high, and high college level with regard to control by the black or brown in the community of their local schools. And that's where we stopped.
Chairman,
yes.
I'm Esther Walker from the Community Action Council, Larry E., and I did bring one of the parents and the children who would like to relate that this place you heard the school system is concerned. Ms. Freeman and
you not ready yet to react, Ms. Freeman?
No. Well, I'm always ready to ask. But the point is, I don't know where to start. For me, I can talk anywhere. I guess I can say anything and feel no pain. But for a teenager, this is the first time, I guess, and to talk before a group of people, I think it would be nice if someone else could break the ice and let her know what you expect, what are you looking for, what kind of answers. I don't think that you should make her first on the agenda to open something that she's not familiar with.
Well, then maybe I will then.
I would like to speak on the subject of appeal, because the child out of school approximately a month and a half, you know, after he has been suspended because of the placement to another comprehensive school, either Wright Brothers. So this is what I'd like to happen, is for the parent to be able to go to the appeal the very first time instead of waiting, you know, after they decide what they're going to do and all of this that they have decided the child has done, which is usually if a one would speak out and really determine the parent is, you know, that the child really didn't do all these things. Teachers do go into personalities a bit too much. Perhaps the teacher has something wrong with her feet, and she goes into personality with children's feet. I mean, there are many things that they do. This child, particular child, what happened was through gym, I don't know. But it was three particular schools, right through gym. If they hit her gym shoes, and she went to the other school, and she got into it. The next school was supposed to transfer her gym clothes over there. And they said that they lost them. And then the final analysis was proven after she was kicked out of school that this that her gym clothes were over there all the time. But anyway, the thing that occurred was she was kicked out really was about a scuffle. But in the final analysis, it all ended up that was a plot through three consecutive deals. And this is one thing that should be stopped, because there's just building up too much animosity in the children. But anyway, come back to the appeal. I wish you would consider really letting the parent go to the first hearing where that child went out of school at least a month and a half, because this campus is education. And many times these kids' children are very smart children. And this particular child, I had checked this through, and the way they did it, what they were very nice about it, you know, I have to give it to them, they were very nice. Now, for me, I usually don't say this, but I have to admit it. They threw out about 20 questions. If you did just half of these, you're guilty. You shouldn't be able to go back to comprehensive school. So I sat there with the attorney and what have you. She couldn't speak, so I decided, well, I'll take it. I'll take the child through it. So I took her through it. She answered all the questions, so they decided the child wasn't guilty and that she would be permitted to go to another comprehensive school. That was three schools. So this should certainly be changed.
All right. Your concern is that some method be found by which the parent can start the process right away on the first notice. Esther?
Well, I recently went to O'Farrell School, and we talked with the principal there. There had been so many complaints that he said that he was going to resign in June. This is Mr. Tate. But the thing about the families that we care, that this particular time, the child had been asked to pick up paper, or they had some type of a misunderstanding, and all the Negro children were sent home, and the others were sent to gym, and this was the family's argument. And we had him to understand we didn't come there to
accuse him of anything. We were coming there for information for the community, which we were going to have our community action council that particular night. But he became so disturbed, so I could understand why he was so disturbed. All we wanted to do was to get the information and to get the child back into school. After this, the child has been put out of school about four or five times. And to me, this is a little ridiculous for a child who's in his seventh grade to have been put out of school this many times without any real reason. And this is why we have so much animosity on the, with our teenagers, because they are pushed around from one place to the other. And if you want them to have higher education, you can't be putting them out of school. On a little minor detail, we had another instance where our child, this was my child, she kicked a chair and didn't want, you know, and there were three Deborahs in the group. So the teacher called her back. But now if a parent go there, well then of course everything is all right. But what about the parents who are afraid to go to school, you see? Because I wouldn't have allowed my child to be put out of school. The whole school system couldn't do that. There must be legal ways. And I asked this particular teacher, I am the counselor. Well, maybe I should change her from another class. So if my child is wrong, then I say punish my child. But then let me know what the punishment is all about. And I don't want her pushed around. Of course, I personally would not allow this. So, of course, that was solved. But then we have many others. We had 15 children within one day that were sent home from O'Farrell School. I'm saying that the counseling is not very good. I'm saying that the teachers are not very good because they don't know how to communicate to the youth. And I'm saying that the parents are so afraid. Now, we had other parents that were supposed to come down here today. It could have been because of the tragedy that we had in Senator Kennedy's death. But nevertheless, I think that they're more afraid of you than anything else and the school system. Now, why should any human being be afraid of this group of people in here? You're human beings like anybody else. And who are you to be afraid of? Why should we have to be afraid of the school system? This is wrong. I say that there must be this change in the schools. There must be change in the curriculum in the schools. And then we're so tired of our children just getting vocational training. Well, they can go out and do that on their own. We want higher education for our children. We want them to be able to communicate with some leader in our community. And this is just about all I have to say, but I think that you're going to have this major change. Otherwise, you aren't going to see very much Negroes, Mexicans, or our own children getting higher education. And why? You're going to have to change it yourself, and you in this room and others like you are going to have to make this change. You can think about it if you want to, but if you don't, you think you've had trouble, there is going to be more trouble. And there's this feeling, and I'm even afraid to walk the streets. And I'm generally not afraid of very much anything. So I'm just telling you to think about it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to hit two steps. One is discipline, and the other is the conflict. I think that the consulate in Southeast San Diego should really, there should be some type of training set up for these consulates in trying to direct a student entering high school, for instance, Lincoln, entering high school on what kind of subjects are, and tell them the difference between the subjects they can take to go into prestigious college, a four-year college, than subjects that will limit them to only certain jobs. When I say this, I'm speaking of something I'm familiar with. My sister-in-law, I raised her when she went into San Diego. She told the counselor she wanted to be a nurse. The counselor, in turn, told her she wouldn't make a good nurse. She would make a good business. She should take business. Consequently, she was given subjects that led to nursing. She took no foreign language, no science. When she came out of high school, she still wanted to be a nurse. She passed the test at state, the test at nursing. but because she had no foreign language and no science, she still, in order to get into this type of training, she would have to go back to school to take the subjects that she could have taken in high school. This would give me 5 years that she would have to be in training before she would become a nurse. Well, this is disturbing because the 3 years to become a registered nurse and could have taken these subjects, but the counselor can guide these children wrong in 15 minutes. How in the world can anybody sit there and tell a child in 15 minutes what's good for their future when I, a parent that stays with them for 10 or 11 years, can't say what's good for their future when they still have 3 grades to go? I think that a child that has made up their mind on what they want to be is not the counselor's business to guide them in another field. Another thing, I think the counselor should make it plain to them that when you take notes, when you do not take a certain amount of English, math, history, government, science, and a foreign language, you cannot possibly enter a 4-year college. And I believe that this is the reason why they are pushing them all into a business course, so that they will start into a junior college to pick up the subjects they should have picked up in high school. They will get disgusted and discouraged, and they will not even finish the junior college, so the city will not have to be bothered with placing them in a teaching job or a better job or becoming independent later. So I think it lies in the counselors, the counselors in the school. And unless the counselors become more interested in helping the child decide the future, I'll decide the business. Everybody cannot be a tiger, and everybody cannot go in business, and you have very little chance of becoming your own boss taking a business course. That's fact. Now, the next one is this. I think that the school board is too far in disciplining children. Today, I don't know the difference between how far do you go to call, what do you call striking a teacher? Would you say if I go out to fight the teacher, or if the teacher hits me and I hit the teacher back, this would be striking the teacher? If I said, I go out deliberately to do the teacher bodily harm, this is striking the teacher. Or if a teacher runs up to stop a fight and I'm swinging and I miss and swing and hit the teacher, this is a reason to, is this also a reason to be expelled from school for the rest of the year? Now, these are things I don't know. Now, this time I am talking about my own child. David is 13 years old, and he was out of school, and he had no business on the campus, but he did go to the store and cross, well, he goes to Memorial. But he crossed Emerson campus to go to the store by the house, and on the way back, he decided to get in a fight with one of his friends. And while he was fighting, the teacher came up to, the fight started outside the school grounds, but the kid gave him a pretty good lick and got away and ran back to the school ground, and he chased him. And sure, as he, when he chased him, they run up on the school ground, and it was a fight. So the teachers, all the kids were yelling and hollering. It was right after school was out, and the teacher came out to stop the fight, and he was swinging, and he stuck the teacher. But he was expelled for striking a teacher. Now, the next day, of course, the police was there patrolling the schools in the afternoon. The police is always there in Logan Heights. So the police took him to jail. To juvenile. It was juvie. And to the juvenile hall. So I got this call, and I ran. So he told me to come down right away and not pick my son up, that he had no record. He had talked to his previous principal and find out about him, and he really had been in no trouble. But so I could come and get him if I come before 5. But when I sent him back to, when he went back to Memorial the next day, then Memorial suspended him. Memorial School expelled him for the rest of the year. So my husband and I both went down to talk to the principal about it. And that the principal got up. He was real nasty because I asked the same question, what do you call it? And when he got up, I think when he cursed at me and pointed his finger, my husband told him that he was a man that controlled himself. But he will not stand back and let no one insult his wife in front of his face, and he's not going to hide behind the act that he is a principal to use abusive language to me because he doesn't use it, and he will not take it off anyone else. At this point, he left. But I don't want him back in Memorial because if this is the way the principal treats me, I don't want him to treat my child this way. I'm not interested, really, in what will happen to my child. I'm wondering what will happen to the average child. Because this child would be no good if he didn't have parents home to motivate him that these things would go on. He's got to be taught every day to look forward to these things. But the average parent will not care and will accept the child being home without going any farther. And you're not helping the child by expelling him out of school for the rest of his life. The average child probably wouldn't want to go no way, but the law said he must go. So maybe this would open up questions for debate. How far, what do you call actually a lick or striking your teacher? I would feel like if you were going out to do bodily harm, but in swinging you strike a teacher, would you feel that this is grounds to be expelled from school?
Bob?
I don't know.
Do you want a reaction to the question? All right, let's get some reactions on what has been said so far. If there are any, then it's not one reaction on what was already said. Judge?
One of the subjects dealt with by the Citizens Committee on Equal Educational Opportunities was this very thing about counseling.
May I ask you to talk a little louder, Judge?
Sure. One of the problems that was discussed by the Citizens Committee on Equal Educational Opportunities and upon which recommendations were made was this business of counseling in the schools. We found that the San Diego City school system was woefully weak in this area, terribly weak. As a matter of fact, I think one would characterize the counseling they have as not counseling at all, but I think a more active description would be that the counselors were the internal policemen. they are not trained to counsel in an educational field. They are not trained to counsel in the field of personal human relations. Basically, the counseling system in San Diego City Schools is composed of those who have been trained by an educational system that doesn't know how to train teachers even, but by teachers. I mean, they're basically teachers. And most of them are, and I shouldn't say most of them, but too many of them come out of the athletic department. They're coaches, and there's something about a coach, something about somebody that can that can carry a football or run around a track that's supposed to make them able to deal empathetically or understandably with students. Well, they can't. They certainly are not able to counsel with respect to their future education. And I'm not going to go into that anymore. I was an athlete, and I see one of the representatives of the school system here who was a very dear friend of mine who was one of the best athletes San Diego State College ever had, but he had something more than that. But most of them don't. most of them don't. My own son at Horace Mann, his counselor was a physical education teacher, a coach, and he's supposed to counsel him in his future educational plans. He had no concept of how to counsel somebody like my son on his future education, because what his capacities were beyond the capacities of what this counselor could understand. And this is true of most children. The counseling system is woefully weak, and we recommended a professional counseling system, that counselors who deal with children be professionally trained. They be trained in the area of human relations. They be trained in the area of counseling for education, that they not use pull-out English teachers and other teachers and physical ed coaches and so forth, and have them serve as the counseling function of the school system, because they are not prepared, and this is most pronounced in its weakness in the areas of minority children, where they have absolutely no concept, really, about the needs, and furthermore, the attitudes. Let's go back and start using the term we haven't used here too much lately, the racist attitude of the educational system is such that, and the teachers, is such that they assume in advance that the minority child does not have the capacity to be what he wants to be, to have the higher education that he feels he's entitled to and probably is capable of like anybody else. And therefore, they get counseled out of being nurses when they want to be nurses. They get counseled into fields that are innocuous when they want to do more than that. They want higher education. That is one aspect of it. We found precisely what we have heard this morning and recommended to the school system, and I have not heard of any great change. Maybe we will this morning. Maybe Mr. Fry is here to report upon some tremendous changes in the counseling program of the San Diego school system. I hope he does. It's probably something that's going to happen in the future, because it hasn't happened yet. In this other area of discipline, I think the school systems are separated from the facts of young life. They are institutions that are designed to tranquilize. They are institutions that are designed to avoid the facts of life itself. And they sweep under the rugs by kicking kids out of school, those who have problems, instead of dealing with the problems to the extent they should. I'm not saying they don't deal with them at all, but this business of expelling kids because of some violent act that they may have participated in a society that fosters violence, is abdicating the school's responsibility. And it's about time they got back to not creating little children who march quietly up and down the aisle and sit still and keep their mouths shut and speak only when spoken to, or only when they raise their hands and are recognized, and throw them out at the first sign of disturbance or violence and abdicate the responsibility by sweeping the problem under the rugs. The educational system is failing the young people of the country, and therefore is failing society.
Any other reactions on the counseling? Any other reactions on the counseling or the discipline? All right.
You know, the counselors also, in this particular instance, fail to tell a principal the problem before the child is expelled from school. Because in this particular instance, after I got the mother to tell the principal what the teachers had conspired into doing, then he said, I'm a troublemaker, and he would have me tell Jack Katz on me. So I said, I supposedly worked for him. So consequently, it seemed like they should let the principal should know what's going on before the child is expelled. In other words, the counselor is the intimidator, the one who's always calling the policeman on the child.
John?
Carol, I was wondering if I didn't want to shift directions, but I think that one of the initial items of the dialogue was to raise to the height of public debate some of the basic problems affecting the black and brown children in the ghetto. And I if there are no other parents who would like to articulate specifics, I'd like to at least raise this issue for question. And I have several observations. First, I believe that people who have spoken this morning are articulating problems. They are simply unhappy in general with the whole educational system. And I think that we have to deal with it, but it also brings to mind the compensatory education program which we have here in San Diego. And I don't think that the administrators here can answer. I don't think it's their duty to answer to this kind of a question, and that is whether compensatory education, which reinforces racism, and we know that this is the basic problem, whether the compensatory education itself does not reinforce racism in our society, that we ought to be debating this in this. And I don't think that Mr. Stone, Mr. Fry, Mr. Matthews would be able really to answer for the Board of Education, because the Board of Education, acting through this citizenry, should be the ones that should answer and respond to the basic problem and not the administrator. All right.
You are raising the question of the whole concept of compensatory education. We're going to raise the
topic. Which documents racism.
Yes. All right. Other reactions still on these two areas? Ms. Freeman again?
Just I'm going to introduce my daughter. She's kind of young, so you have to make allowances. But I'll tell you one thing. I think it all started from the time that the children quit school. They decided that they no longer wanted to go to an all-girls school. And Lincoln was a school in our area. So going to parochial school from the time they entered school until they got to the year before graduation to quit, I think it was a big difference in if they had to. It was an adjustment too to come from a Catholic school going into the public school system. The first day, one of my girls went to public school. It was a known fact that when sister entered the class, everyone had to stand until sister said be seated. And the first day my daughter went to school at Lincoln, and when the teacher entered the class, she stood up, and she was the only one standing, and finally the teacher asked her, what are you standing there for? You're out of order. So this was one of the first things that was different from what she's been doing all this time to change to the public school system. When the teachers come here, it's supposed to be absolutely quiet, I guess, and wait for the teachers. But I'll let Mona tell you why I had to come to school to Lincoln almost every week, because it was almost something going on. And what displeased me very much was the idea that the teacher told her, I didn't like you from the first day you came in here.
When you asked the question, I didn't understand what you were saying, really, but
well, that's all right, honey.
Just yell at me up here.
Okay.
Don't be nervous. We want to hear from you. We need to hear from you.
Yell at me.
Yes, you can.
Sure,
and do it.
All right. If you get started, no problem.
Okay. When I first went to Mason, it was different because
this isn't school. Go ahead.
Nobody here but the judge.
Okay. It's I'm the judge.
I didn't know you were so shy. I didn't want to talk to me like that.
We'll get back to her.
You know,
yeah, no problem. We'll get back.
Why do we have to put our youngsters in this position?
Yeah.
Again, we have to come back to the concept of racism. If we didn't have this, we wouldn't have to put this young girl through this. This really, to me, is very upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah. You're saying the very causes that we have to listen to youngsters.
We really don't have to put her in this position. Not any one of our youngsters.
Right.
But we need to communicate, and we have to hear, and we don't hear enough, and we don't listen enough.
But I recognize
what she's
saying.
I understand
Wayman,
that.
She says she will do it. Talk to me. Tell me all about it, okay? Whatever happened in Lincoln, okay? And I'm right here. Nobody's going to bother you. When you first started to Lincoln, what happened?
Well, it didn't really happen when I first started. The trouble started when I was in a 12th grade.
Okay, what happened then? That's all right. Tell me what happened.
Well, you have to take American government to graduate.
All right.
So then everything was going all right to about the second semester. And the teacher, you start saying, you have to do so much before you can graduate, but you have to take the Constitution. And you have to stand the government. So if you do certain things that you don't like, instead of taking it out of your citizenship grade, you take it out of your scholarship so you won't be able to graduate. I'm nervous.
That's all right. Go ahead, on. You're doing good.
And so then I didn't know nothing about it. I just go to my classes, and then finally one day I was called to the office and told me that I was going to graduate. So I said, why? So she said, because my teacher's going to flunk me. Oh, yeah, I can't do it.
Well, now, this is just an example of what happens in the school system. Why should this child have to stand here and cry because she doesn't understand? Now, I'm about to cry, too, but not because I'm afraid. It's because I'm darn mad.
Yes, I do.
And I just don't appreciate, and I do not feel that this should have to be. Why should she have to stand here and cry? She's a living example. Why should she have to cry like this?
She should.
Well, number one, I don't think there's a bunch of adults to put her in this position for the first time.
Yeah, well, she didn't really talk, but to look at all of your faces and knowing just what has happened, even in just society itself, this is why I think that you people should make the change that's necessary. And in fact, you should send your teacher to school at least 5 years. Let them come out in the ghetto and get acquainted with the people in the area, so that they won't have to be put to school, so they would understand and respond to our way of thinking. We have even a language all our own. They are trained on the middle class way of life, and when you get so low on the bottom, how in the world can they relate to us? I really kind of sympathize with some of the teachers in a way, because they're too young in the first place, and the next place, they're frightened of the children, so therefore, rather than to have them around, then they put them out of school. But I'm just saying, if this is my child, I couldn't stand it. I'm trembling now, but not because of fear of you.
Well, wait a minute, Esther. When you have 17 in the hospital, 6 and 7, you can get used to it because you have problems day to day. And that's what I have, 16 years in my
hospital.
So every day I get a different, I have different problems on different things. Oh, they're not all my children. But I love children. I don't know any three children are bringing to me. I'll take them too. But Mona, this is right. They were taken away from her scholastic grades because they didn't like her attitude about different things. Well, another incident that happened at school, one of the students told a joke, and Mona, I don't know why she's so upset today, because this is really not her nature. She didn't laugh when the teacher told the joke, and she says, Mona, where's your sense of humor? She says, I don't think that your joke was quite out of place, and I don't see why I have to laugh when I don't like what you say. And so this was another strike against her, and this is why the teacher told her, I didn't like you from the first day you came in here. And she said, most of the children have come in here from Catholic schools, making a difference anyway. And from that day on, I have been to Lincoln very, very often. And the last time I went to see about Mona, it was what she was talking about. They were telling her that she couldn't graduate. that she couldn't walk in the graduating classes. She couldn't be in the ceremonies or the rites, graduating rites. So I went to the school to find out about it, and they told me that she didn't dress for gym one day or something, but it was really something real stupid. It had nothing to do with her grades at all. So I talked to the counselor and the teacher and some of the others, and I asked, well, what is this? You still haven't told me why she's not going to graduate when she had enough units to each to graduate in January. And I made her come on the rest of the year because I had nothing for her to do. And I made her continue to the rest, you know, for the rest of the semester. So now why isn't she going to graduate? And why isn't she going to be there with the others? So when I left, I got pretty mad, and I told him that she was going to walk in that graduating class if I had to carry her. She was going to be in there, so fine. So she got to march in the graduation class, and she did get a diploma, not a certificate, because she had enough units almost from cathedral when she went to Lincoln, because she made the A, she's A and the Latin class. She carried the Latin class at cathedral. And when she went to Lincoln, she couldn't continue Latin because Lincoln did not have any higher Latin than the Latin she had already taken.
My husband and I came to San Diego in 1960. At that time, we had a youngster who was 6 years old, ready to go into the first grade. When we came to San Diego, we decided to live in Southeast San Diego by choice because we happened to have found a good parochial parish with a good parochial school. Well, when we moved into that area, we started meeting people. We met a lot of the Mexican Americans in that area. We met a lot of white people in that area. We met a lot of black people in that area. We became friends. We started to discuss the school system in Southeast San Diego. Well, we came around June of 1960. And we did not feel that the schools were adequate enough in that area for our youngster to go. Now, education is very important to us. I come from a family. My father came from Mexico with a third grade education. He was earning on the average of about $40 a week. And with that, he raised and educated four children and we all managed to graduate from high school. This was in the state of Arizona. So my husband, under the GI Bill, managed to graduate from University of Arizona with an engineering degree, which was still not adequate enough to really go in and take any kind of a supervisory degree without going further to college. Well, fortunately, he does have a good job here in San Diego. He does make an adequate salary. And I decided, well, I would go to work so that I could help my youngster further his education because we want him to have a better education than his father managed to get. Well, Southeast San Diego is not offering this to us. And I happen to be working in a very unique situation in Southeast San Diego. I was school secretary at St. Rita's School. St. Rita's School has, I would say, about 52% Mexican American children, about 35% Negro, and about 15 to 18% white. And St. Rita's School is not really an adequate school either. I mean, there's an awful lot to be desired. We don't have the equipment there that the public schools offer, but yet at the same time, we felt that it was better than the elementary schools in that area, Valencia Park. I mean, I'm not trying to degrade the school. I'm just trying to tell you that we did not feel they were adequate, Valencia Park and Canto. So we sent him to St. Rita's School, and he managed to get a pretty decent education. And in the seventh grade, we were dissatisfied with St. Rita's. We pulled him out of St. Rita's. We were going to put him at O'Farrell Junior High. We went down there for an interview. We spoke with a counselor, and still, we did not feel that O'Farrell would offer him what we wanted. So in order for him to get a good seventh grade education, we transported him on the public bus clear from Encanto to Linda Vista Road so he could attend San Miguel Episcopalian School. And for about 7 months education, we managed to spend $1,200. Well, the ordinary family couldn't have spent $1,200. We couldn't either. But I went out and I got a job and I worked in San Diego for the 5 and 6 months so that we could afford the $1,200. Well, for the eighth grade, we could not afford another $1,200, maybe even more, because this would have been 10 months of school. So we put him at Holy Spirit Parochial School. And he has managed, again, to get an adequate education, eighth grade education. But now, we're facing a problem. Are we going to send him to Lincoln High School or Morris High School? We are not. We are going to send him to University High School, again, on the opposite side of the city, because we do not feel that he's going to get the education that he will need. Or we could also send him to the other high schools in the area of San Diego, but we have decided we will just keep him in the parochial school. That's the way I feel, and I'm not talking just for myself. I'm talking for my neighbors. I'm talking for the white people in that community, because they are also sending their children to other parochial schools, and they will also send them to the high school and any other parochial schools in San Diego, because they don't feel that they're getting adequate education for their children. And I'm also talking for the media that area that I know.
Thank you.
Now, after just listening to the young lady, and I really appreciate this. Now, I wonder if you really heard what she said. I'm really wondering if this group has really heard what the young lady has said. And what she's saying, and what I think she's saying, and what I hear her saying, that our schools in Southeast San Diego are taboo. They aren't any good at all. And I think that you here should do something about it. Because I want my child, I don't have one. And since I don't have a one, I want to have the best education in this city. I can't afford $12,000 to send her anywhere. I can't even afford $12,000 to pay for my house. Whatever it is that you have to do. All I'm saying is that my child has to stay there. She has to go to a Lincoln. She's going to Lincoln. She has to go there. But then I'm asking you, and I'm not asking you, I am telling you to change it so that my child can have a good education, because it's important. Because you can't even get a dishwashing job unless you have a college degree. And everything they're asking for is all these ABCs behind your name, and that's the color that you have them. So I'm saying, give us the schools, give us the teachers. And I insist on this, and I'm one person. I insist on this in some kind of way, because I belong to other organizations, and I'm saying that in those. Or I said it last night. I said every time I go out. So I'm saying to you, do something about it. Let my child and others get a good education, higher education. I'm really begging for this. Otherwise, you can just forget San Diego, really, because there's going to be trouble. And I'm saying it because I work in the community, I know and I feel and I hear these youth talking. And I know, and unless you can do something about it, and unless you can help these families, just expect anything, and then you are to blame. I charge you with this. I even challenge you.
All right, Bob, you were trying to get in some time ago.
May I sit up here to talk? I'm Bob Russell, and I teach in the city schools. I've taught there this is my 13th year. I teach at San Diego High School. I taught 3 years at Memorial Junior High School, and this is my 10th year completion at San Diego High. I teach American government, and I was also ASB advisor there for 3 years. I also am chairman of the Human Relations Committee for the San Diego Teachers Association and a member of the American Federation of Teachers Association. I'd like to say, first of all, that I'm speaking not in behalf of other teachers, but only in my own behalf and my own experiences, and also on behalf of the Teachers Association, because there will be some materials I'll present in that area. Now, some of the things I'm going to talk about will relate to some of the things that Terrence has said. Some of the things relate to some other things, because you did mention you wanted me to come, and I did prepare some things, and I'd like to address myself to the various things, if I could. Is that all right?
And you stick with just those that are in this vein?
Yes, all right.
To you, you know, later on?
All right. First of all, regarding the whole problem of counseling, I think that you have to realize that the counselor also is in a difficult position. First of all, we use the term in the city schools advisor, and that's really what most of these people are, advisors. And I think when we use the term counselor, we mislead students, because counselor implies something else. Most counselors are advisors. In some cases, they may have pupil personnel credentials. In many other cases, they don't. They're really
what that means.
Pupil personnel credential would be a credential where you actually have had at least one full year and probably almost 2 years of graduate work in counseling and counseling techniques and related education courses. It's offered through the School of Education. And I think they also have some training in counseling, some practicum in counseling. But you have to realize that there are very few opportunities in teaching to be promoted within the framework of instruction, and counseling is one of these. In other words, quite often this is offered as a reward, as a token to some people, and quite often some of the people who are rewarded are establishment people. You don't rock the boat, baby, or you don't get rewarded if you rock the boat. And this is also true in terms of PTA. The PTA represents an administrative, district-oriented type of group, and this is exactly why we don't communicate. It really disturbs me, incidentally, and I'm an employer of the district, that board members aren't here, because the administrators who are here, and I don't speak for them, but I can imagine I can feel them for them, they're caught in the middle. I mean, they're caught in the middle of policy, and they're caught in the middle of their personal ambition, et cetera. And this has some infringement upon communication. I don't care how much integrity you have, et cetera. It's really, you have to decide where you're going to be, and it's very, very difficult. And besides, they don't have policy-making power. I think two major groups you haven't included are the policymakers, and you haven't included students, because I think that's your most vital group who can tell you what's happening, and there are plenty who are willing to tell you what they feel about this district. And it's not going to be all negative. In fairness, there's some very positive things going on.
I have a question. Did we invite the 5 Board of Education members, and have they decided as a matter of policy not to attend? And
Marcy, you've asked 2 questions.
We invited Dr. Ralph Baylor, Dr. George Hall, Mr. Joseph Greendown from the city school.
None of the politicians.
None of the. You mean today now you're talking
today.
About? Well, those are the ones they invited today.
Isn't a member of the Board of Education a member of this dialogue? Mrs. Dyer, I know, was here at a certain time. She's a member of the Board of Education.
She's not a member of the dialogue as such, but what you're saying is that we have always invited, we sent letters to the school board.
I was
board.
Informed that they were sent agenda notifications.
Yes, they were sent agenda.
I would like to see the 5 of them always get the same notice I get as a councilman, because I feel they should.
They get that notice. That's why I said you asked 2 different questions. For this meeting, she gave you the specific letters.
I think this concerns the feeling of the minority community. Why should we constantly come and tell you what our problems are when we have no decision-making people here?
And that's a fact.
So we have to make this a policy of this dialogue. Only people who can make decisions are the community.
We have some here, but we're not hitting education. We're not hitting education.
We want people on the board to get come here, because otherwise, there's no effect, just like the young man at the stadium. Well, they're in a kind of precarious position. And after all, they do have to make a living. They do have families.
I think some people don't want to go into the kitchen because it's too warm.
Right.
All right, we're back then again on this other topic of the importance of the areas discussed here and so forth. But we should let Mr. Russell continue here. Mike, I think your question was answered except for the last part. You asked, and did they therefore indicate that they did not want to be here as a group? The answer to the latter is no. But not just for this meeting. At no time have they indicated the reason they did not come is because they would not come as a board. So that's your complete, you know, question. Bob, go ahead, please.
Please feel free to interject questions. And I'm no expert. I'm just telling you what I feel. I have some documentation to substantiate what I feel. And it's on my own opinions, and that's all I can say. And there are other colleagues who feel this way as well. Because I have a lot of areas, and I don't want to dominate this, but if you have questions, raise them. If I can, I'll answer them. But getting back to the conflict, which was a specific thing raised, you get this whole bag of it's kind of a promotional factor. The other thing is that counselors are advisors. Their main concern, the biggest problem, they have 160, 170 kids to handle per hour. And their biggest concern is to get a kid through to graduate. They program people. This is their big concern. Program changers quite often. And also, more and more, there's a tendency to put upon them the function of discipline, which really, for instance, San Diego High is getting a full-time counselor next year, and I understand he has a number of options as to what the job calls for. I've seen the description. It could be anything, but he's going to be used there to relieve our administrative assistant, who primarily is a disciplinarian. And we don't use you can work through guidance or you go through the visiting teacher, and they have very heavy loads, and it's very hard to get a kid through these programs. And this is also true with retesting in terms of kids who are specialized, put in special classes, and quite often stay there. And that's never was designed to be the intent of the class. It's very limited retesting. But getting back to the conflict, the counselor has some inherent problems himself, and he's caught between the administration and the student, and his term is misleading because students look to him as kind of a parent and psychiatrist and everything else, and he really isn't. Even if he had the training, which he quite often doesn't have, he isn't prepared to do this. In one regular class, we got into discussion of counselors or student activities. This was a regular class of 35 students. And I had a kid just record, and that's why I say you should invite kids to this and let them point the things out, and they will, what they said about their counselors. And then one of the counselors asked to come in and defend the position, and he acknowledged some of these things as being true. And remember, this is always qualified to mean some counselors. It isn't a glittering generality. But they say, they go on and say, in terms of counseling, and this is activities too, activities which are not meaningful, inclusive of all students, that the in-crowd student who comes from the right family or the right, he's a prestige student in athletics or what have you, he's the guy that runs the school, and he's the type of guy that the expectancy of administration and many teachers look toward. And the other kids, the have-nots, which are a big chunk of them, aren't in the in crowd, and they aren't looked upon or called upon very often, although there are many teachers and administrators concerned about this. School is not the major social organ for some students in the city. It's not like in the county, Chula Vista High or Sweetwater High, where much more activity revolves around the school. Many of our kids work, and many of them relate to outside activity, so in that sense, it isn't the school's fault. Administrators stifle ideas with negative attitudes, and they qualify that with men's vice principals. Going back to this, much of our administration is PE-oriented. Now, I'm not running down PE men. There's some individuals who are very good qualified. For instance, you heard the charge that in remedial classes, it's second-rate classes. I think that's true. You take at San Diego High School, out of 13 men teaching remedial classes, 9 of them are PE majors or PE direction. Now, I'm not saying there aren't individuals who are in PE who aren't competent, but if that is so true, why don't we use more PE men in honors courses? Why don't we use more PE men in advanced? And if that's so true, if your background doesn't matter, why don't we use more subject matter teachers in coaching football or track or some of the other fields? We don't do that, but quite often this is true, and it's the old attitude of discipline, the old attitude of public relations that will handle these kids, and that won't do it. It won't do it at all, and there are some individual PE people who are very dedicated, but I would maintain that if you don't have some training and subject matter background, how can you give the kids the best? And quite often, and the Kerner Report puts this, publicizes what they call destiny control. A kid who's in a basic class or a remedial class soon knows his stigma. The teacher knows it, and the administration knows it. And it's only a self-fulfilling prophecy that I'm doomed to fail from the very beginning. There are kids at Memorial Junior High School who have been stigmatized and from San Diego High School from the very beginning of the seventh grade who have remained together all the way. The same complaint comes now from kids in advanced classes. Many of the competent kids are complaining they aren't being allowed to mingle. They have very rigid types of courses they have to take to get through college, and they're tracked, and we'll get into tracking a little later. They are doing something about it, and they don't see each other. In this way. They go on to say students don't have enough time because of home duty. Student government has little or no voice over administrative decisions. Activities directed to the in crowd. Common consensus, this school is more friendly than most schools. And San Diego High is probably the best desegregated school of the lot. 49% white, 23% Negro, 23% Mexican American. I say desegregated, I didn't say integrated. And there is a difference. It's moving in some areas toward integration, but it isn't completely integrated. And there are many people concerned about it, including the principal who has worked hard at this. They went on to say activities are there if students want to use them, so that some students are reluctant. And we have to ask, what is reluctance? And I would maintain that's a symptom. And we've got to get at the causes of which bring about those symptoms. Clubs don't have adequate publicity, and sometimes they're too expensive. Students are scared. They need a little push. Teachers should identify student needs more and encourage shy students. Teachers are too impersonal in helping students, and counselors are too impersonal and don't care. So this was 35 students in a regular class. And again, we qualify that by some. They're individuals who, of course, have the problem. Now, in relation to discipline, which was the second area that was raised, I think that quite often our discipline, we lose sight of what the purpose of discipline is. And the purpose of discipline is self-direction. That's the whole function of discipline. It's not discipline for discipline's sake. But you have to realize that we have been oriented in a traditional approach. I don't care what you talk about, progressive education. We still are hung up with this traditional approach in which many people feel that discipline for itself and of itself is good. And so you find that quite often, We're always concerned about rocking a boat. We're always concerned about the fact that there's no order, law and order, we talk about quite often. And so our whole emphasis is upon a kind of a rigidity. And this is true in terms of vice principals. For instance, and they stereotype kids. When the LSD and the pot problem came about, they build cases like stereotyping, saying, now kids with drama probably would be the ones who were more apt to use it. So those kids are always being pulled out and questioned about things they may not know about. And this, I maintain, you have to look at this on an individual basis. Kids are interrogated sometimes with policemen there without notifying parents, which is, I think, a clear-cut violation of the law. The parents are supposed to be notified before a kid is taken out of the class, and I know specifically of cases where that's at. I think the district could publish the rights of students and parents. We often talk about the responsibilities. District procedure says, for instance, that you have to give a kid a failure notice 5 weeks in advance, or approximately, or at least enough time to allow that child to make up his grade. And yet we know there are incidences, we just discussed one this morning, where kids are dropped, one kid with an, and there are other cases, with an AE dropped because he wouldn't appear at a concert, which was at 8 o'clock, which violates state law, you can't hold him to that, and he was dropped with an FU for it, and some teachers did speak up with no warning. This is the type of thing parents should know about. The PTA, getting to this, is administrative oriented. The implication of the PTA is not to rock the boat. Everything's groovy. Now, PTA has done some happy things and positive things. They want more people, but you have to ask, why don't the people turn up? The people who are in PTA are generally people, there are exceptions, whose kids are making it. And the people who come to open house are people whose kids are making it. In terms of the curriculum, we have pretty good evidence from the Lindsley report that the curriculum has some problems. We've done things to improve that curriculum. There was developed materials for the Black American and also for the Mexican American for teachers' use. Some schools now have materials available within the classroom for student use. Some libraries have built up. We've developed programs and student exchanges, which is very positive, where one group of kids from one school visits another group for the full day, and then they carry on the dialogue. There are student dialogues, which were initiated by Crawford, but some schools have been doing these in another name. That's just another word for talk, and some schools have been doing this for 5 and 6 years, and as you know, appeared at your hearing, students appeared and made the testimony to this. This is positive. I know there's a lot of work. Dr. Stone was involved with this, Mr. Carr and others, with a model school, which will ultimately work to desegregate, desegregate, because that's what they're trying to do, but bring kids together in the 10th grade. But for instance, when we had an accrediting team come to San Diego High this year, and they came back to, you know what accreditation is, that's where you send the next team of experts in, a neutral team supposedly, and they evaluate the school, and then they give it a rating, the maximum is 5 years. We got a 5-year rating the first time, and they came back a second time, and their concern was instruction. And they theoretically were supposed to go to every classroom. Now, they saw track classes. I have a track class. I taught advanced, regular, and remedial. I have 2 remedial classes. One, the kids asked me one day, where are the Anglos in this class? I have nothing in there but Mexican-American and black students, and this is why the model school, I think they're concerned. But when the accreditation team went through, they made no mention of that. They talked about all of our positive things, everything was wonderful, and we raised the issue, and there was no time for even questions. They said we'd agreed that there would be no questions from the staff, and so afterwards they did agree to say we should do more to bring about common experiences. But, I mean, here was a team of experts really saying, you know, in effect, that's too shaky, we don't want to talk about it. We better talk about it. Yeah. The typical rioter in this country was a kid between the ages of 14 and 24, once again, according to the Kerner Report, who was undereducated, but he was educated. He was about a 10th or 11th grade dropout, who was underemployed or unemployed. And he's the kid that's causing the riot. And he didn't trust the school because the school didn't do much to him. The Kerner Report quotes the Coleman Report, which says, a minority student starts school with a slight retardation. When he gets to grade 6, he's 1.6 grades behind. When he gets to grade 12, he's 3.3 grades behind. That's a symptom that I'm not saying the school is solely responsible for, but it's certainly partly responsible for, and it's a public institution, we should do something about it. In terms of the curriculum, I just mentioned the materials. The San Diego Teachers Association conducted a study and just completed the tallies of it 2 weeks ago, finally, and this was a sample questionnaire given out to every 5th grade, 8th grade, and 11th grade teacher. At the 8th and 11th grade, it was U.S. history teachers, because, as you know, a few months ago, a parent went to the Board of Education representing the CIC and charged that not ample materials were being covered in the city schools. I think the response for somebody was, or some people, they were ample. Well, I'd like to share these results. These were given to 530 teachers. Once again, the 5th grade teacher was selected because that's where American history is supposed to be emphasized in elementary. At the 8th grade level, U.S. history is amplified, and there they have selected a quote, integrated textbook, which name drops and does very little more than that, Land of the Free. It's better than most, but it's still pretty sad. And so their responses were real good. They thought it was positive. And then 11th grade, which was the U.S. history in the 11th grade. Now, here are the results. We asked the first question, and incidentally, we got better than 50% response, over 200 and, about 256 respondents answered in some detail. The question generally said, do you feel ample study of the contributions of minority groups is adequate? 51% said yes, but 47.3% said no, and that was of all the teachers asking. When they asked respectively, we broke it down, Negro, 45% said yes, this is teachers, the experts in the field, 43.4% said no in the city schools. Mexican American, 29.1% said yes, 49% of the staff, 5th, 8th, and 11th grade teachers said no, they didn't feel it was being adequately taught. And then others, 16% yes, and 27% no. I think that's significant when half your staff responding. And I understand I'm no expert in the field of statistics, but I understand when you turn out a questionnaire and you get better than 50% response that that's considered fairly valid. The second question, should schools teach contributions of minority groups? The when the question was asked, 93% said yes. And incidentally, 7% said no. 89.1% when it came to the Negro said yes. 81.7% Mexican American said yes. Conducting study of minorities, should you do it in a separate class or an integral part of the program? 61% overall said they felt it should be an integral part of the program. For the Negro, it was over 50%, and Mexican American, 37%. When they asked, do you think these things should be taught throughout Negro History Week only or throughout the year? 90.4% of the staff said they thought it should be throughout the year. Resources adequate. We ranked them excellent, very good, fair, poor, very poor. And when you total it, there were about 70% that said they felt they were anywhere from excellent to fair. But interestingly enough, there was about 20% that said either poor or very poor. Should prepare materials of the role of a minority. 60% said they felt there were prepared materials, but 24% felt that there wasn't. Do you feel comfortable teaching? 27% said they didn't feel comfortable. And do you feel knowledgeable? 27.8% felt they didn't. Now, when we also had places for comments, and when we asked people to comment, we would get things like, I teach it, we have land and sea, and they quote things, but we shouldn't identify, we shouldn't separate, we shouldn't call attention to this. Or, and then when you say, well, could you list a resource that you use? I don't know of any. Or some, several people said, I was in the Army through World War II, and that was my experience. Well, the Army was segregated during much of World War II, and I'd hate to think that that was the kind of experience a person was banking on to teach an integrated history. And I think the evidence shows it is an ample, and there's a definite need for improvement. Now, this summer, I understand, and I haven't gotten this confirmed completely, that they will experiment with four courses in minority group history. It will be U.S. history, 4-hour block in the high schools, with an emphasis on the contributions of minority using supplemental text, and that's a start. But we still get the hang up. For instance, at the city schools, I've worked with the Curriculum Problems Committee, which is the committee. It's the one that's done some positive things in getting films developed. Dr. McJunkins is there, Mr. Matthews, so forth, some of the people in this room. We've worked 3 years, and we've gotten on the nitty-gritty many days. But we still get hung up on racist ideas. The first time they invited people to the city schools to make policies, you know who they invited? 5 black people. Now, I think that's a racist approach. How are 5 black people going to make the decisions for the total school? It sounded to me like they were placating people. I mean, these were people who raised up. Still, when they talk about teaching Negro history, they want minority members to teach it. I maintain anyone can teach it who is willing to be dedicated to learn to teach it. And we can't. If we wait, I agree it would be nice if we get some visible people teaching it. It would be nice if we got some visible people in clerical positions. The schools have done better than this. The Ed Center looks much better than when I worked there 4 years ago. But still, we get clerical staff at the school level, and I know at San Diego High, we have one person and they left. I think it would be helpful for kids to see this kind of image. And we say, well, we can't find them. We could use high school seniors who are in clerical positions, ultimately get them trained and be hired right from the school in this way. We have done a lot with the youth opportunity, the EOC programs, in giving kids jobs. Getting into the area, then...
Would you hold up there, Bob, a while, okay. And let's get some reactions. Any other comments?
Mr. Wayman, I have to ask, may I ask him a question? Mr. Russell, I thought you were beautiful, but I am kind of concerned as to whether you might lose your job or all you have
to do. I could care less.
I
love teaching first, but that. I'm a parent first. And my kids have gone through some of this, too.
Thank you very much.
I love teaching too, but I'm confident also I can find a job somewhere. And that's, incidentally, some teachers don't have that feeling because we put teachers on the bottom. Some teachers feel I'm just a teacher. And I think teachers and parents should be helping to run the schools. And too long we've sat back and said, we're just teachers. You can get kicked in the head and you say, thank you very much. Teachers' roles changing. And we should look to the teachers. We train. I've spent a lot of time working and reading and preparing, and I'm proud of what my background is. And I think we should call on teachers and parents to do this. And administrators are also kids who want, who are concerned and who are dedicated teachers. They didn't get this far as they want, but they're hung up in the middle. They're hung up in the thing, I can't rock the boat. And I know it comes from the top. Look, our school system is a corporate system. And it's a monolithic system, and the power is at the top. And people have got to realize what power they have. And we haven't. And we've got to.
Beautiful.
Other comments, other reactions? But,
a question on the survey. The one item you talked about, comfortability and adequacy, was this related only to teaching those specific subjects?
This was related to actually handling minority group material. See, we wanted to see if that was a hang-up with them, and it was with a small group. But most of some said, you expect I'll admit this, even though when it's adult knowledge, some teachers say, you think a teacher will admit I don't feel knowledge, but some did, you know. Quite a few.
I would like to ask Mr. Russell one question. Do you think there's more emphasis put on control of the child than on really basic education? What I'm saying is this, I visit the school and I spent the day there, and it seemed to me that it was more emphasis put on controlling the person, controlling the child from the first grade through the 12th grade. Sit when I say sit, stand when I say stand, write when I say write, read when I say read, and it's too much on controlling the individual than what the individual is actually going to school for. And I think it's a terrible thing. I take applications. Incidentally, I'm an employment specialist, and I'm interested in placing anybody on jobs, but mostly with minorities and the ones that have a hard time finding jobs. But these students come from San Diego High School. And if you think I'm kidding, I'll be happy to show you some of the applications. They can't even fill out an application. When I ask neighborhood workers, a graduate spelled neighbor, N-A-B-E-R, is out of sight. And that's really out of sight. Now this is a fact, that a graduate made on an application spelling neighbor this way, because B-E-C-U-Z. If this is what you spend 12 years going to school to get a piece of paper to say, I've been to school. Now, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong, but something has to be wrong somewhere along the line that they couldn't learn to spell neighbor and sending a graduating announcement, Mr. and Mrs. Freeman and the HOLE family. Now, this is terrible. I think this should be an insult to anybody. This came from San Diego High.
I teach history.
Because I learned the difference between those holes in the fifth grade. And you mean to tell me a child go all the way through school for 14 years and they're still spelling this in the Freeman and the HOLE family? This is awful. And I think your city should be ashamed to know the graduates come up and can say they finished your city schools and this is the way they react. Or this is what they learned.
We have other school people here. Again, may I suggest to you that you should remain conscious of the fact we're not expecting to get policy positions on that level. But you are here. Some of those who haven't reacted, would you like to react, comment, what have you? And those who have reacted, if you will just sit back for a few minutes, let some others react. Right?
Well, I was very impressed with Bob Russell visit with his presentation. We've had meetings where we've had two or three members of the Board of Education here, at least two, and all we've talked about is city problems. And today we're talking about the nitty-gritty of education, and we don't have anybody here from the elected officials of the Board of Education. And when there is something coming up on the dialogue this strong in the field of education, I think in addition to our regular notices of invitation from phone calls to be made to
We've done all of that, as we said earlier.
Well, I personally will call.
You weren't here when I laid it out.
Yeah.
I have here in front of me, Dr. Daly could not be here because he's in Sacramento. And I went on to indicate those that they indicated would be here. I further mentioned that no Board of the Education can be here because of the budget hearings today.
Maybe we can make our agenda a little more flexible and find out when they can be here and then have them commit themselves to be here at a certain time and then put it on the agenda when they're going
to be here. I'd like to appear before the next meeting of the Board of Education and request 10 minutes to speak, and during that 10 minutes I'd play the taping we have of Mr. Russell's presentation.
You said you would do that?
No, let me say
something about the board. May I just...
The board?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we want to keep this in the right perspective. I think we want to keep this in the right perspective. If, as a city councilman, you'd like to do that, that is, appear before the board, I think you should prepare your own presentation, because otherwise it becomes this dialogue participating in that. I think you should prepare your own presentation, get with Bob and the others, make your notes, take your tape, but it's yours. And as a public official, personally, I think you might do that. But Bob is the one whose record you're talking about playing. Let Bob react.
I'd like to react two ways. First of all, I feel personally, I don't feel insecure about saying things here. I feel these men on the board are men of integrity. I feel Dr. Daly is a man of, they wouldn't have gotten there. They want to know the problems. They have pressures too. Unfounded pressures perhaps that we don't know. And I want to talk to that point a little later about the politics in the school, because I think that's a very important aspect that we've got to handle. But this is a problem. I'd like to also remind everyone, the Supreme Court Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court, said teachers can give an opinion as long as there's not too many lies involved. And I don't remember that. So I really feel comfortable in terms of board and administration. I feel they'll take this in the right light. I'm with them. I'm part of the district. And I feel any other teacher. In fact, Dr. Daylord has said as much, and I have a quote where he said, teachers can speak out. It was in reference to the Lindsley hearings, and some did.
Right.
I might say something about that, though. There was fear, and not only fear, but there was official, not top official, but there was official indication that they should be fearful about testifying, and we had to get that statement issued to the teachers so that they could feel free to testify.
On that point, I might mention, as one who participated in those hearings, our office received, I don't remember the tally we sent to that committee, we tabulated the calls that came in to us because they thought they could call CIC and we could express it to the official committee, if you remember. We wrote a communication to that committee at that time and indicated the calls that we had received from teachers, not only teachers but parents, but specifically because the school system works with the teachers, and one or two administrators on a sub-level who had wanted us to communicate to your committee that they were afraid because they had been threatened or at least implied intimidation. We sent your committee those kinds of remarks. Mike Johnson.
I was just going to say that the record ought to show that, well, when you have the education, the school system on the agenda, then specifically the board should be, members of the board should be invited. They were not this time. That's right. First thing.
Yeah.
They have a general invitation, but they were not told, look, we want to talk about education. You try to be. That's what we should have done, but we didn't do it. So far as the administration is concerned, now there are four people who were the school sent down here. And I don't think you ought to assume that they're not decision makers. They are on a decision making level. And so far as the administration is concerned, now they don't make policy, you need the board, but the fact that George Hall is here, I don't see how come the representatives of George Hall can't do whatever George Hall says.
Dr. Stone.
We have some members here from the school. Can we hear from them if they wish to make any comments? Dr. Stone?
Well, one comment I'd like to make to relieve any misapprehension. You don't need to be worrying about Mr. Russell's job.
What about his promotion?
I've listened carefully to the to the report and comments and have made note, many of the comments relate to a specific individual in a specific situation, and I think it would be very difficult to react without, it would be a presumption to react without having some knowledge of the specific situation. But as far as the topics that were dealt with, in the first place, these are ones of concern to many of us trying to improve. Secondly, in your follow-up discussion, which you mentioned at the next session, I'm sure we will try to present some information relating to the topics, counseling, discipline, and the others that were mentioned.
Any other reactions? Members of the school? Personnel, Eddie?
I think some of the points that Bob brought were very good, especially about counseling. And I as an adult school counselor, feel very strongly about this. I think they should be called advisors. That's what they are. And in the secondary schools, and in fact, legally, they're supposed to be called advisors. Unless they have the credential or the license, then they are an advisor. And I think this takes some of the stigma off of counseling. And if we need counseling, then I think we ought to attack that problem. I think one of the things that the lady brought up a while back, I'd like to see more minority people actually go to the schools and not be afraid to talk to the administration, as you mentioned. I would hope that this would continue, and I would hope that I think sometimes the white middle class individuals have no fear of going to the schools, and the schools listen very carefully. But I think in the southeast area, we don't get the communication isn't good, and it might be the fault of the school too. I'm not saying whose fault this is, but I would like to see more and better communication in this area.
School person, first, and all right, Lynn.
I'd just like to talk to this point about counseling, advising, and the credential business. A few months ago, I was called to speak to a class that the University of California Extension was having. The title of the class was Counseling for the Disadvantaged. And as a representative of the welfare department, I was asked to come and speak to them about poor people and about welfare recipients and how this whole thing enters the concept of counseling, I assume, because that was the title of the course, Counseling for the Disadvantaged. The class was being held completely away from the disadvantaged area of the community. It was a group of teachers who had been teaching during the day. It was late afternoon, so they could have met at Memorial Junior High School instead of over on the other side of town. And just the sheer experience of going there and meeting in that school would have given them a different perspective than they were getting. But it was an Anglo teacher, an all-Anglo group, whose ideas and sensitivity were really pretty difficult to comprehend. But this is a group of people who are currently working with children and presumably are going to be counseling the disadvantaged. It was about like speaking to a Kiwanis group and Rancho Santa Fe as far as their conception of what the problems were. And in the second place, I think that there might have been somebody really more appropriate to talk about poor people and to talk about disadvantaged more so than me. I'm sure that there are people sitting around this table here. Yourself, John Johnson, other people who might have been able to give a little different perception than I was. But here I am, a middle-class Anglo, called in to talk to an all-Anglo, unsensitive group about counseling for the disadvantaged. So maybe they get credentials in this, but I have one question about the adequacy of the training that goes in some of these courses to counsel the disadvantaged.
Well, may I ask a comment here?
Are you the only speaker throughout this course?
No.
From the outside, I'm thinking that there might have been others. And I would agree with you that this certainly is a point well taken, that you need a kind of broad spectrum of individuals to come in and talk with these people. But I wouldn't negate the fact that you are an Anglo, that you would be unable to give them some information or to bring them around to some sensitivity and feeling, the feelings that they should have in regard to minority groups.
Well, there's several points brought up here. No, I was not the only outside speaker brought in during this course. The teacher talked with me about some other people who had been brought in. But I didn't detect anybody that I knew that I thought would be especially appropriate, for instance, if I had been making a selection of speakers to bring in. I don't remember now what the other point was that I was going to react to that you were making. But nevertheless, it seemed to me that this was going to be a course where the people would get credit that says that they have had this course, and that might be the only constructive thing that would come out of it.
I think you'd always find a small number or a sound room which seems in regards for that reason. I would like to point out that I think we've been talking about education here today and the problems, and I believe that an area where we're all making some progress in is a greater understanding and some insight into minority problems and working with kids from areas of poverty. Now, in the Sweetwater District, this summer, we're going to hold a three-week workshop dealing with just these very problems. And of course, our district has a sizable number of Mexican-American youngsters, and this is a minority group that we're looking toward. And in the course of this workshop, we're going to have a number of outside people come in. They'll be minority individuals that will make sense in the community by way of giving them a greater understanding of the issues of these people. But I think the area that holds greatest promise of improving the whole situation is greater understanding and sensitivity on the part of teachers and counselors and administrators.
Ed and then Ed, Tom?
I think he answered it.
Oh, okay. Tom?
Yeah, I'll try to think this out as I talk. Mainly, I want to perhaps trigger some thoughts for Mike's presentation, or trigger his thinking on some things that he might raise in the presentation that you might make for the school board. Frankly, I don't know of any concise stated analysis on the part of the school system or the school board on why the minority race child that goes to ghetto schools are underachievers in respect to the district norm. I don't know of any concise state of analysis without it being wrapped in 1,600 pages of gobbledygook. I think it can be boiled down to something quite simple if we want to do it. Secondly, the matter of compensatory education, I think we ought to know compensating for what? Compensatory education suggests to me that our kids need more help than others to absorb education. Is this true or isn't it? Do we need more help, or is there some fundamental deficiency in the school system that is contributing to this need for compensatory education? These are some of the kinds of questions I think the school system should answer in plain language, without it being couched in something about this sick that gets them to not being motivated at home and all of these other things that it's usually couched in. There is a simpler explanation, I believe, or a simpler concept from which it can, the other stuff can begin. But I would suggest to Mike or anyone else who's going to go to the school board that you first decide what questions are you going to raise. And then understand when you get the answers, if you do. But as far as the standard answers are concerned, I think I could recite some chapter and verse right here now. But the school system needs to get to some specific stated analysis of either answer the question of whether or not there is something inherently inferior about the ghetto child, or whether there is something inherently inferior in the school system as it relates to the ghetto child. This, I think, crystallizes the question as the one that needs to be answered.
All right. Go.
I'd like to say that I've been coming to these dialogues for about 3 or 4 meetings, and it still boils down to how do you understand the way the child feels, or in this particular case, how do you understand the way the minority groups or those other people who cannot get with what is going on? And it still boils down to the person who is teaching, the person who is listening has to listen. And this is the feeling that I've gotten, that everybody is here eager to do it, but they still haven't learned how. And I think we ought to do that. We ought to concentrate on that. I think that somebody said something about the child who was rocking the boat. Why is he rocking the boat? This is the thing that the teacher or the authority has to find out. Why is that person rocking the boat, and how can you help him to come into the mainstream?
All right. Are there other... at this point, it seems to me to be appropriate to mention an observation that I'm going to ask Rosemary to make. On May 4th, we, the Tennessee CIC, had a minority group college and high school conference at Lincoln High School all day, and a dance that attracted some 400 and some students that night at Southwest. I think it was appropriate, if I may ask her, if she will summarize briefly those things that might relate to what you heard this morning, if you can do that, if you can do that briefly.
You know that I can do it, but maybe not briefly. We had this conference that had been planned. Sometimes we say, how can you do these things, and there's so much to be done that it's an unending job just to plan it. For several weeks, we have worked with the minority students that are on campus now, the members of the BSCs, the BSUs, and the MIA groups, Mexican American Youth Association. And these college students came together and really planned their own conference and decided that basically they simply had to let the students know that they could do this, that they could go on to college, that this was in the realm of possibility, and they could show them by their own experiences that they had gone on. They could talk to them at a gut level, a feeling level, say, we know how you feel now, how insecure you feel, how inadequate you feel. We know no one has ever perceived you in this role before, because no one ever perceived us that way, that we've gone ahead and we've done it. They devised their own motivational devices. They had big buttons that said yes, yes to education, yes to opportunity, and formed what they called the CIC Yes Set, which is Youth Education Set, made up entirely of these students. The whole conference was turned over to them. They didn't want any adults. They wanted to do it themselves, and they planned this together. They had free dinner at noon and a free dance at night for those who attended the conference, and they could bring a friend and pay a porter for them to come. The interesting thing was there were about 200 that came to the conference. They had panels. They divided up into small groups. It was very difficult for these students, first within the small groups, to even start talking. They didn't know how to talk, interchange between the counselor or a group leader, who in this case was a minority college student. But these students were patient and encouraged them and brought them out. They had small group sessions that lasted a couple of hours, some of them. And about 95% of the students there said no one had ever talked to them about going to college. No one in their school experience had ever encouraged them along this line. And they came out, some of them thought they came to the conference just for the free button, or there was a free dance that night. But they came out thinking college was a real possibility for them, something they could do. And it was that the students let them know they were interested in them, they perceived them in this role,
they were going to help them. The students right there were their living role models. This was the most important thing of the whole conference for them. And that someone believed in them. Now, this can happen in schools if we first realize what the problem is and then become dedicated to overcoming it. Another interesting facet was that night there was a dance. The students also asked if they could not have adult chaperones. They wanted to chaperone the dance themselves. This is Southcrest. We knew the rules that you have to have the matron and the, what is it, the rent-a-cop or the rent-a-matron. And Carol and I were the only adults, and the college students were there. Now, we have never found out what happened, Sergeant Gutierrez, but that rent-a-cop and rent-a-matron never showed up. And
we didn't pay them either, did we?
No, we didn't. But they were all, yeah. So all we had were those students, and Carol and I, and they let me stand by the men's john. So, you see, as a white, you have to learn to follow and take your role and just be supportive. But with over 425 students at that dance that night, with a live band really turned on, wondering, where can we get these buttons? We want another conference. We want to come back. We didn't know anything about this today. There was not an incident, was there, Bill? Bill was there taking pictures and having a ball. The kids were having a ball. The individuals who ran Southcrest afterwards said this was the best organized, best behaved dance they have ever had there. Another example, incident was, he said, probably when they all leave, we'll find these bottles and we'll find this, because we often do. They found one incident that there had been any drinking. And I think that that's extremely significant.
Thank you. I was at the door that night. I was at the entrance door, watched it that night, and I had a ball. I was tired as the devil when I got home, but I had a ball at the entrance door talking to all of them and playing with them and carrying on. I think the important thing, though, is those items that related to what we discussed today, we have the recordings from all those conferences, the interviews, the whole thing, and I'm sure we'll be putting on more. Any other reactions there?
Karen, I'd like to get back to the main reason we called this on education, and this, I think the impetus to have the meeting and discuss education was brought out by Tom Johnson several weeks ago when he gave eight, there were 8 points, I believe, and number three, I'm not sure, I think it was number three, suggested that the Southeast schools, the schools in Southeast San Diego, be, and I, you can correct me if I'm saying it wrong, I'm just paraphrasing, be controlled by the minority members in the community, or the members in the ghetto, I believe, the term that was used. And I was wondering if maybe Tom would elaborate on this for us and, you know, and clear up some I think there were some misconceptions on this area. Would you?
Yeah, that was stated without elaboration for the sake of brevity and, of course, control the different things to different people. But the context in which control was used there relates to having control over what our children thought, control over getting much stronger material and improved system, especially in the field of history and social sciences, social type activities. The minority rate that if it better fits the realities of the life that the ghetto child lives in. Now, they're actually life, they're realities of the life that the white child lives in too. But the essence of the thought was that our kids, the ghetto child, and the ghetto school is sent to the school to be taught how white folks live. It's portrayed to him that this is America, these books and materials that he's looking at, this is what America is all about, and it's an America of which he is not a part. And in essence, it's teaching him a lie, and we think that this starts to destroy the integrity of the teacher-pupil relationship right from the beginning, because the America that the school material has the child relate to doesn't exist for that child. And when the teacher says it's a great big democratic country in which everybody is equal, and the kid knows himself that this is a lie, then you're starting to teach him a lie right from the beginning and destroy the integrity of the teaching process. And to say that the kid should retain his interest in school after that is ridiculous. After he loses his interest, we come along with a federal program when he dropped out, and we're going to help this poor, unfortunate, dumb youngster. Well, the essence of that thought was the youngsters do have a learning base, a base from which they can learn, but the fault is the school system does not relate to that base. It does not know how to relate to the youngsters. I think they know how, but they don't do it. The only thing is, after the school system fouls him up in this manner, then the system that we live in says the kid is dumb. Well, we say the school system is dumb because it doesn't know how to relate to this youngster and the realities of the life that he lives in. Control, in the context in which we use control, we want to better control this situation so that we start teaching our kids the truth of the world they live in, the truth of where they fit, the truth of what minority races have contributed to this country, the truth of what's happened to them in this country, how we got to get to this thing of being underachievers in ghetto school and whatnot. These are all realities of American life, and these kids need to learn it. The context in which we use control was to control this process that starts to work on our kids from kindergarten right on up, and we maintain that that is teaching racism in the school system. And we want to get rid of it. Now, I don't know if that answers your question, but this is what we're talking about as far as control is concerned, is the control to teach our kids in such a way that it doesn't start to insidiously teach them right at the beginning that they are, in fact, inferior in this white country.
Bob? Carol, I'd like to elaborate a little more on that because I think that's a point well taken. And earlier I mentioned the influence of politics in the school. I think we have to take a look at this very seriously from the standpoint of selection of textbooks. We're constantly faced with the fact that teachers are usually the people involved in the selection of textbooks. They form textbook committees. But we're also faced with the fact that there are outside pressures who are also always exerting pressure on what's to be selected. And we're always coming up with something that's supposedly safe. And quite often the quote safe textbooks is one which is very slanted. I'll give you an example. Ebenstein's book we use in the 12th grade, Communism or Two Ways of Life, is quite slanted. It's the best we've come up with, but it still tends to make good guys versus bad guys, and you know we're the good guys and they're the bad guys. Prior to that time we had a minor McCarthy period we went through, and the district spent several thousand dollars buying a book by Colgrove, Communism versus Democracy, which we use now as an example. It's been pulled and replaced by Ebenstein, which is a little better, but we use it as an example of propaganda, and kids rejected it when they got it. And also outside groups who come in, and I'm going to name some names here, the Pillars for Freedom, which we play up so greatly in our papers and so on, bring in speakers and use the school as a means of getting kids. They get tickets, they use the whole operation of the school, and yet the only speaker that I can remember in 5 years who may have been liberal or leaned toward that approach was Hubert Humphrey, and something happened, he couldn't make it that day, and he called by telephone and talked. But you got guys like Krulak, I had conservative kids coming back and saying, you know, this is pitiful. It's slanted material. we get the same thing with the selection of materials. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't have the right to have a conservative point of view represented, but you should also have a liberal point of view. Our concern should be the approach to truth, whatever that might be. And we know that isn't happening in our school. We've got all these pressures, and unfortunately, the liberal elements aren't as organized. And so they don't make as much of an influence. But I think Pillars of Freedom is fine, but if we're going to use Pillars of Freedom and let it go through our structure of our school, we should have a little say in the kind of speakers that are invited. Why isn't labor ever invited to make a presentation at the Pillars of Freedom for labor's behalf? Or why isn't some other group of liberal people invited so that the kids will get both sides? We have one speaker there who said he was going to be the first to join General Walker's army when he marched on Washington. This is the kind of thing he was addressing the students. Now, this is the kind of thing we're allowing to be maintained in this city. And it's about time we attempt to take the politics out of our schools and make it be formulated for truth. And it's the same thing with the selection of textbooks. The new textbook that they're going to use in history, although it's going to be supplemented by other materials, goes back, we're going to spend a third of the district's money, this is at high school level, to buy a book which reinforces once again some of the stereotypes that have been perpetuated for years. And some objected to it, and it's still being selected. Well, this is the type of thing, and let's face it, it's nice to say, okay, you've got supplemental materials, but the textbook for too many people, and it shouldn't be that way, but it is the basic source. I mean, if you can get a kid to read the textbook, you're doing your job. And so if the textbook has errors in it, then the kid goes out with those errors. If the only speakers the kid has are speakers who are slanted. We had speakers come into our school who said, all you Democrats have to clean up your organization, and who said that came right sponsored, you know, select groups of kids, and wouldn't give any chance to questioning. Now, we have another one, Mr. Quaker, who came into assemblies, massive, and gave a real distortion. And I think you saw some reaction. The kids themselves raised the issue, and there was finally said, we'll do more about it. I know sometimes pressures are brought to bear, but we ought to help the policymakers not to have to bend to one set of pressures and not another.
What was this crack you made about us Democrats?
He said we need to clean up our party because he went to sell me when he was a undercover man for the FBI. He went to sell meetings with it just happened to be Walter Reuther, Stanley Moss, and so on. He was quoting Lenin, and he knew Lenin better than Lenin. In fact, I don't know if Lenin said some things, and we didn't get a chance to question all we asked.
They are going to the schools around here?
They have in the past.
Yeah. God save us.
Another thing I'd like to allude to, the trophy mentality of our district. We're always interested in getting big trophies. We got so many trophies at San Diego High, we don't have room for kids. We even got a trophy last year for human relations. You know, the idea is right. But this is what we're always, you know, some people are hung up with, the public relations, another trophy, we're looking good, you know. Trophies all over the place, and this is what, you know, and we're not devoting our attention, you see what the kids say, the in crowd, and we're not devoting our attention to the bulk of kids who aren't in the in crowd and who are going to make up this America, and we aren't concentrating on how we play the game as well as how we win the game. We're too concerned about some in positions of power, too concerned about winning, about CSF, about how many scholarships your kids get. And they're and very limited, although Mr. Baer did some work in that area, on the types of grant aids for kids who might have the potential or the interest or the drive. And we're still hung up with tests which are culturally slanted, which don't measure motivation, which don't measure planning, which don't measure maturity. None of these tests measure that. We're still hung up on a Stanine score, which is a very slanted score, and some people mark them down like if it's the Bible. And man, some of us in this room wouldn't have made it if they depended upon a Stanine score. We'd be disc diggers. And I'll speak for myself and some others. And nothing's wrong with disc diggers, but that's sad if you could do something better. And we're alluding, we're helping to perpetuate this kind of system, not only here in San Diego, but all over.
Yeah, one last quick one, Cheryl. And this model city thing, and it's happening all over the school system also. I read with interest about how they were going to teach the dangers of marijuana the dangers of narcotics. We are teaching the dangers of glue sniffing. We're even fooling around with sex in schools now, you know. And I don't know if that's dangerous or not. But I mean, it's being taught. But the functional racism, which is the most devastating thing in the life of the ghetto child, the school system is not about to start to teach anything about that, and it is an historical fact of American life. But we'll teach about marijuana, glue sniffing, snakes, sex, you name it.
You're trying to make
right down the line. But we won't teach about functional racism as it has existed in this country throughout the years, and it's the most needed thing that's in our schools today. To quit turning out successive classes and generations of racists who then in turn insist that the school system turn out another generation because out of their own ignorance of what this thing has done to America. Now, I challenge the school system to teach the history of racial discrimination in this country and what it has done and how it has brought us to this point. And forget about teaching my youngster that he shouldn't go out and smoke a marijuana cigarette. I've got enough sense to teach him that. You can teach him that if you want, but teach him the other thing that is most important to him, and the school system is not about to tackle that. And I say that it's not.
I'd just like to make a quick comment that at least at Southeast Adult School, we do have a class in American Negro History, and the teacher is Bob Russell. He's doing an excellent job.
John?
No, just a correction. Tom said model neighborhood schools or something. It's model schools rather than model.
You said
model
city. Yeah, he just wanted to say.
He said
model. May I add one?
Better ghetto.
One or two comments. Bob referred to someone who spoke before the Board of Education, which raised this whole issue of whether or not minority contributions by minority persons in this area, specifically the black and the brown, that is the Mexican American, the Indian, etc., was being adequately taught. And he, in his remarks, he mentioned that someone representing CIC was a person. She alluded to CIC, but she wasn't representing us. She was, it's public, it was in the paper, as you recall, on TV. It was a Mrs. Anderson who went to the Board of Education and raised that issue. I just said to say that because later I'd want to still be recorded that Mrs. Anderson herself made an excellent contribution as a private citizen, though she alluded to our remarks and so forth, because she raised this issue before the board. Finally, the mayor is out of town, and his representative was here a few minutes ago and had to leave. But I did see today present that Tom Hom, who's here now, there's Sam Lofton, city councilman as well, and Mike Schaefer left. We still wonder where the others are, as far as city councilman is concerned. We see two from the city manager's office here, Minna Wilhelm and Julian Wise, Bob Dennis, the Board of Supervisors, from the Board of Supervisors, and I think that Ed Butler, of course, is here, and Sue Sweat was here. Is this, is he gone?
Yeah, I sent him back to work.
Sent him back. All right, any comments from any of the city officials? Who? Don Sellers. Don.
I'm sitting in the mayor's.
Yeah, you're sitting in the mayor's. Don Keller, the district attorney, is here. Comments? Final comments or observations? Bob, I didn't call on you, and I noticed that you dropped your hand after the other fellow made a comment earlier.
Well,
I didn't mean to ignore you.
You didn't mean to?
No.
I thought you did. I think maybe in the comments I was going to make at that time, I hope they're understood. I was a former school board member, as you know, for 8 years. And during the 8 years that I was on the school board, there were certain groups who we did not accept into our schools because they were mentally handicapped and physically handicapped, and they were classified as uneducable. So for a while we didn't accept those incidents. And then we formed the two schools to take care of these youngsters. The reason I'm bringing this up is that at that time we could graduate somebody from high school who couldn't either read or write because they didn't have the ability to read and write. But we did we did help them a good deal. Some of them couldn't even feed themselves, things of this kind. So we have, from that very low level of ability to learn up to the very high level, and in between those are people who have different abilities to learn. Now this doesn't apply to minority races, it applies to everybody. And these schools, I can't remember, as I visited the schools after we set them up, and I can't remember very many minority groups in there. There's mostly Caucasian. So you can pick out individual cases and say, well, this person graduated from high school and couldn't spell. This is possible. You have, like Dr. Stone said, you have to know the individual case before you can evaluate it. And I think the only way we can study these is to bring up specific cases as we have here. But it's possible for a person to graduate from high school and not be able to spell, not be able to write very well, yet they put in the years and graduated at the time they graduated. So we have this problem, which the schools have. The schools have tremendous problems. I don't want to defend them or condemn them, but they do have tremendous problems to handle.
All right, Lisa. I mean, Marta.
I would just like to address myself to Mrs. Donnelly. I think that the Mexican community wants to address ourselves to the almost chronic, very severe problem that you have in your school district and the tremendous dropout rate of the Mexican Americans. So I'm just saying that next bundle we're going to be creepier, and I hope that you do too.
I noticed that Mr. Reed has indicated one of the
push out rate, I should call it.
Yeah.
Over 30% or something like that?
Well, the dropout rate that Mr. Rivas referred to here, I don't know what facts and figures he was using, Mr. Slaughter, but I think that we have made a comparison with other districts, but I think we would stand very well in regard to a dropout problem. I don't think there's any school district around that has a 100% graduation record here with all students until they begin the ninth grade. I regret very much a statement, as I found in the document here, that we had one of the highest dropout records in California. And I would like very much to make a study to see just how we do stand. And
I think that study has already been made, and we'll see if we can get it for you in addition to yours. I think it's already been made.
By what agency?
Well, I would get all that for you, but I think the study has been made.
Well,
John, you wanted to ask him a question?
Yes, I wanted to ask. I understand that you have a severe staffing problem, that you have absolutely no black teachers and maybe five Mexican-American teachers in the whole Sweetwater district. I wonder if you would be able to produce, give us some figures on the staffing problem.
When he comes back?
Teacher certificate.
You mean when we come back?
Yes.
I couldn't state off the top of my head here.
When you come back.
Right.
All right. I saw Mrs. Hesh's. Oh, you passed. Judge, you had a question to ask or make?
Just a quick response to one comment made by the gentleman behind me about how they compare favorably with other institutions. Well, that is about as irrelevant a way to measure your success as I can think. If you're comparing your degree of failure with others that have failed worse, you are not making a very positive evaluation of your program.
Well, if I may reply to that, what absolute would you apply from any district?
If you have,
say that you are doing a satisfactory job or it's not a satisfactory job.
By not comparing.
if we can't compare within district. I'm not saying this is the most valid way to do it, but if you're going to take a district standing on its own, what criteria would you use then to say that this is satisfactory or it's not satisfactory?
We might say
that you have dropouts that you ought to know about and find out why. That's all.
The original statement was the highest dropout record, and this is a comparison with other districts, is it not?
Well, I think that we have to think about criteria too next time,
right.
And also what criteria you use to place Mexican American in so many retarded classes.
I think these are issues she's raising that we'd like to make particular and come back and react. For those who are here for the first time, we're going to appreciate your interacting here. Next time, we will look at these issues today, and I might ask Martha if she will get the minutes as fast as possible and get a bill of particulars with your committee. If you have to meet more than once, that's up to you, as you know. And so the gentleman here and the other representatives will be aware, so that we too, of where we're going. And next time, of course, by format, we will take up this in terms of some of these specifics. And finally, in front of me here, did I mention the mayor was out of town?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Finally here, I see that everyone got one of these notices. San Diego State College Education, desegregation of San Diego schools. Peaceful, violent, or not at all. I can think of other alternatives, but this is the way they've done it. I suppose next time we could react to this as need to. Oh, June 10th? Oh, that's legislation. Yes.
Real short. I just wanted to comment on Bob's point of having some students. If we're going to continue an education, could we, would the group be willing to have a fairly representative group? Not too large of students from the secondary schools in San Diego?
No, I'm
only if you have a board of us
to the kind of thing this young lady has to go through. I think that we are addressing ourselves to adult blood, and that's what we must do, and that people can trust us to articulate for their children, and that these young children should not be put on a spot like that again. I would be opposed.
This was the position that the Mexican American took, that we couldn't throw our children into the war.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Enough black parents, brown parents to tell
it. Any other reactions to that point? If not, see you in 2 weeks.